Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassāmi. Yeah, on this occasion of the energetical ordinations of Bryce and Tom, yeah, yes, I'll offer a few words and reflection on the Buddha's path. What is the main to train? And just you know, as some of you may know, when the Buddha set out, you know, he didn't set out to find a religion, to start a religion or movement, really. He started out as a spiritual seeker, looking for truth, looking for liberation, looking for freedom. Yeah. And not knowing where. So when he, after 5 years of search, you know, to different types of teachers, different way of practicing, he came upon what he called the middle way of through, you know, harmlessness to sila, to stillness, samadhi, and to wisdom. Yeah. And it's a path that requires training, requires focus. And it's only later that you know, we made a religion, we made a god out of the Buddha, but really what he left for us was a training system, you know, how to arrive at where he arrived at. Yeah. And the wonder of the Buddha is that, you know, not that he had, you know, magical powers, or not that he's a god, which he isn't, he's a man, but he left a system of training and instructions behind that each and every one of us can walk that path. And the amazing thing about the Buddhist teaching is that it's been happening for the last, you know, close to 3,000 years. And it expanded, you know, through different culture, different time. And something that is well tried and tested. It's not something new. Yeah. So, you know, when I came into it, I came from a Catholic background and not much contact with Buddhism, even though being Vietnamese, it gave me a lot of confidence that this is not something new, agey, spiritual thing. Nothing's wrong with it, but you know, it's something that is actually, while it looks different, it's something that has been around for a long, long time. And then when you read the Buddhist history, you read the biographies of the different kind of Buddhist saints over the years, it gives you a lot of confidence. You know, something that, you know, each and every one of us can do. Man, woman, doesn't matter your cultural background, nationality, your talent, whether you're wealthy or not, smart or not. It's irrelevant. Old, young, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's the ability to steal the mind, the ability to train it in a certain way. I was saying before, we all want to be happy, want to be peaceful. But wanting to be happy, wanting to be peaceful, it's just the beginning. It's something that we have to do, to incline towards. But it's something that is, it's, you know, within the ability in each and every one of us. And telling, you know, some of the people coming here, looking to train. You know, they come here, they don't want to go to school, don't want to go work. So I go to Buddhist monastery, feed food and room and board. That's true. But there's a few more things involved than just free room and board. Like, and in Perth, this is a bit of a sideway. In Perth, Ajahn Brahm, you know, tells a lot of jokes at the Dhamma Center. And his approach to spreading the Buddhist teaching is that people are very tense in their workplace, very stressed out. So, you know, Friday night they come for a talk. So you don't want to give them too much information, just a bit of Dhamma, but mostly jokes. And then they start laughing, you throw a few Dhamma bits in there, and then they go away and they benefit from it. But our angle to spread Buddhism, Buddha Dhamma, it's not through jokes. I'm not a big joke teller. But it's through the food. We have really great food come on here for some reason. We have really great cooks. They come and they cook this beautiful food, and people come for the food only, they think. But little did they know that we start to Give them training. We give them training about what's it like to live a harmless life. What's it like to live a disciplined life? Wake up 4 o'clock in the morning to do the chores, do it harmoniously, to look after each other, you know. And you'll see, I mean, you know, kind of the benefit. And that's the thing, that gave me a lot of faith and happiness, actually. You see so many, you know, people coming in, young, old, middle age, sometimes a bit dark, a bit sad, a bit confused, a bit lost, a bit stressed out. And they come to this forest, they join in the community with a bit of chanting, a bit of mutual work, a bit of meditation, and in no long time, a few weeks, and you see this kind of brightness starts to happen, this clarity, this calmness, this peace coming through. And it just gives me a lot of faith and confidence. Yeah, you know, the path works. The teaching, the Dhamma, peace and stillness, these are powerful truths. It has power on its own. It's nothing that I have to push, nothing that I have to go on. It's just a natural law that happens. When you slow down, when the mind is peaceful, it becomes more bright, you're happier. And when you're happier, you're naturally more kinder, more harmonious, more thoughtful of others. And it's also natural that when you're unhappy, when you're tired, when you're pissed off, then you're around more grumpy, you're around more kind of angry, and you don't care about what other people so much. So understanding that, yeah, we do accept when people make mistakes. We do accept that from time to time there's arguments. When you see, you know, kind of the natural physical laws of how the mind works, yeah, and you see the kind of the cost and condition that goes into it. The happier you are, the more peace you are, meditation comes together, there's a natural happiness. Craving goes less, you're not so restless. And there's a steadiness to the progress, steadiness to the mind. And it's a path, you know, like the Buddha said, like we do the chanting in the morning, evening. You know? Beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful in the end. Each stage of the practice, wherever you're at, you're bringing peace to yourself, bringing benefit to yourself and others. Because, you know, we all have a mind. We all want to be happy. And we affect people around us. Yeah. So you want to give people happiness. You can't give something you don't have. If you're unhappy yourself, you're suffering. It's hard to make other people happy around you. And that's a natural law of the mind. Like Ajahn Chah said, you know, you want world peace, you know, still your own mind. And everything else follows from there. Yeah. All the peace, all the love, all the respect that you ever wanted from life, the meaning. What does it all mean? Yeah. To still the mind. Be still long enough. And it's all there. It's all inside each and every one of us. We just have to be still enough to have faith, have courage. Allow these things to blossom forward. Allow these things to unfold naturally in its own time. These days, people have big bucket lists to travel the world, see this, see that, you know. And yeah, it has this usage. You know, it's good to see the world one or twice. But really, truth, happiness, meaning is not out there. It's in here, in the present moment, in your heart and mind. But it takes patience. It takes, you know, a lot of courage to not do. You know, it's always kind of energy, forces, just pushing us to do things, to express ourselves, try new things. But really, it's the non-doing that we learn from. It's being able to watch things come and go, that we transcend suffering. So yes, you know, they may not be keen students, when they were young, but I tell them, this is not just free room and board. It's not a spiritual bed and breakfast. This is the Harvard of training. There is, and that's where the similarity is. It is like more of like an academy here. There is a sharpness, a position of, you know, showing up in the morning, be here before 5 or 10 minutes, set things up. You're late, First time it's okay. Second time, you sleep in the sala for 3 days. That way you can't be late anymore because you're sleeping here already. Yeah. So there's this incentive just to, you know, to be focused and you know, to be on top of things. And once there's clear instructions, you know, people do rise up to the challenge. And that's the thing. As long as there's a clear instruction, and it's not from, you know, power tripping that we're setting this routine up. It's with this thing that you know, there is the structure of the mind. There is, you know, energy to be worked up. That, yeah, you know, 4 o'clock, might be a bit too early, but the earlier you wake up, you'll find it's really peaceful. It's really beautiful to wake up early and to meditate instead of, you know, wasting your life sleeping in to 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. Wake up, you know, 3:30, you have 4 hours to meditate before, you know, that the sun comes up. Yeah, and then you feel this is natural energy, not natural brightness of the mind that comes up. Yeah. So, and then this kind of precision and how we do things, where things are laid down, how things work, how we clean, it grounds the mind in the body, in the present moment. Yeah. Sometimes the mind gets just drifted away, thinking about different things. And that's where, you know, the energy leaks out. So the ability to train, to be focused, to contain the energy inward. And you'll see that there's still a natural process that starts to brighten up. And there's a sharpness, there's a height, sense of energy, clarity in the mind. Yeah. But there's also, it's kind of a very practical tradition for us. You know, keep it real, keep it in the present moment. Not having too many ideas about what Buddhism like, Nibbana is, you know, enlightenment, it was a mean, jhana, but, you know, in the here and now, in the body. Okay. And the wonderful thing that Buddha left behind is not that, you know, we can, the monks can walk on air or fly through the air or, you know, walk through a wall. That's not the magic the Buddha left behind. May be true, may not be true. But the wonderful thing about the Dhamma and the teaching of the Buddha is that he encourages each and every one of us to walk on earth with mindfulness, each and every step, to be in the here and now. And that's so rare and precious. Very few people are in the body in the present moment. We're always off somewhere doing things, or back in the past, or in the future. The ability just to enjoy the present moment, to be open to it. Because really, truth, meaning, love, it's in the present moment. But we're not here to receive it. We're somewhere else usually, in the past, feeling guilty about something, feeling lost in memories, fears, anxiety, or even the future, what are you going to do in the rest of our lives? What are you doing when you get home? How many pizza are you going to have? What shows are you going to watch? What games are you going to play? Which is fine. But we're here, we can enjoy the beautiful sounds of nature, the frogs, the birds, the wind, the air. And life only takes place in the present moment. Everything else, it's just memories or ideas and concepts. It's not real. Yeah. So the more present we are, the more we actually live. The Buddha said, you know, the mindful ones are the one that lives. The mindless one, it is as if they're dead already. You can see that people walk around like zombies, they're not really here. They're in their head, they're somewhere else. And life is gone. Life is very blurry. Yeah. So it's not just kind of a conceptual thing, a theory thing. No, meditation, ability to be in the present moment. It's those are the skills that we need to live a skillful, productive life. In the monastery, out in the world, in the family. So many relationships break down because the partners are not present for the other one. If you're not in the present moment, you don't understand the other person because you're not just not there. Yeah, when you're present, you can feel, you can understand, you're more thoughtful, you're more aware of the other person's needs. So many people walk around just with their own agendas, what I want from the world. And I have to remind, you know, people, the community, that live, they come, the young people that come and train. Yes, yes, we know what you want. We know what you have in mind. We know your agendas. But look around, open your eyes. There are like, you know, 10 people in this room as well. You know, how do they feel? How do they feel comfortable? So bring that awareness, you know. How to bring kindness and gentleness into this whole room. not just into our own space. And something that, you know, and it's something that actually brings up our own self-esteem, respect, that we have the ability to bring happiness to others. And that's what the Buddha says, you know, just bringing happiness to others increases our own sense of well-being. Yeah. And sometimes the delusion of the worldly ways of, you know, me and my happiness and everything else, you know, is secondary. That leads to loneliness, leads to depression. When you focus on the me and my number one only. Yeah. So that's why it's counterintuitive. You want to be happy, you want a sense of well-being, you know. Give that to others. I always encourage people, whatever you want, whatever it is that you want out of life, what it is that you want out of other people, you know, for yourself, give that to others. It'll flow back to you in many, many folds. But it takes courage, it takes trust, it takes faith to start doing that. But you know, however you do it, it's the same amount of kind of returns you'll get. You throw in 100%, you get 100% back. You throw in 5%, so you get that 5%. Yeah. But it's a path that each and every one of us can walk in different ways. I always remind people all the time, Buddhism is just not for monks and nuns. Meditation is just not for monks and nuns in the monasteries with our eyes closed. And the teaching of kindness, stillness, teaching of clarity, wisdom, and compassion is for each and every one of us to practice in whatever different capacity that we can. Just trying to bring the Buddha with you home when you go. Don't leave it in the sala. Yeah. To meditate anytime, anywhere. Be kind, be gentle, be harmonious. Anytime, anywhere. But it's a constant training, gradual training, something that you have to bring to mind each and every moment, every day, day in and day out. You know, where's my mind? How can I increase happiness and well-being for myself and others? It's something that takes work, but something that brings immense happiness. The training of the mind. The body only goes one way. As you get older, it gets weaker. That's the only thing we're contemplating, like, you know, we as a monk, we do contemplate a lot about death and how it's the passed away. And death contemplation, I try to do it, imagine my own body, imagine going to my own funeral, how my body decomposes. That's in touch. But I find that the aging process brings more humility. Because, you know, you're young, you eat whatever you want, do whatever you want, no sleep, still fine. In your 30s, it's getting more difficult. 40s, not much energy. 50s, yeah, when you wake up, body's always a bit sore. Yeah, so it brings humility. It brings, yeah, this is what happens when you have a body. But it's fine. You know, you can age gracefully. You can age, you know, you can work within your limitation of the body. But it does bring a sense of, you know, the mechanics of having a physical form, that they don't last. It starts to degenerate over time. But the mind is something different. The mind is not a physical thing. The brightness, the clarity, as long as you maintain your level of harmlessness, gentleness, as long as you maintain the meditation practice, the mind is always bright, clear, and energetic. So it doesn't matter what happens to the body. It doesn't matter what happens to life around you. You can be clear, focused, at peace, and still. And that's a great gift. And it's a great thing that we can enhance for ourselves and others. Because the world is, you know, sometimes it's spinning, so much control, so much confusion at times. So much sadness at times. But it's also beauty, it's also peace and clarity. Yeah? And it's something that a bright and clear mind can bring and share to the world. So when you practice meditation, you practice clearing the mind, you practice gentleness and generosity, it's just not for yourself, it's for the whole world. Because you live with other people. We don't live in vacuums anymore. We live in a global community now. So if you're happy, that happiness starts to radiate outwards and affects others around us. Yeah. So like Ajahn Chah, you want world peace? Still in your mind, it's the best thing you can do for world peace. So leave that for your contemplation on this auspicious night with anagarika ordinations of vice and tongue. And may they, it is with you know, kind of pure intention, it is with much happiness and joy that I wish them best of luck. I wish them all the joy and happiness of the path and fruit. And wish that all the fruit of their, you know, all their efforts, all the results, for being happiness for themselves and all beings. Okay, great. Thank you. So we'll bow together and call it a night.